Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
You know, I think none of us ever complain when we get something a little bit more than what's expected. You know, you put on that pair of pants that you haven't worn for a couple months, you reach in there and you find a dollar bill in the pocket. You find a piece of loose change laying out on the sidewalk when you walk outside. Or grandma sends you that birthday card with a $5 bill in it. But we're going to talk about some extras in the game of football. The two-point conversion and the rouge north of the border. Timothy Brown joins us to talk all about it and tell us more in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we have a great episode for you tonight. It's Tuesday, and we have Timothy P. Brown of FootballArchaeology.com joining us to talk about another one of his tidbits on football history. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Look forward to chatting once again about the rouge or the single.
The rouge and the single. We have some Canadian football terms coming at us that many of us Americans are not as familiar with what the rouge is and the single. And maybe, you know, some of that explanation will come in here with your article that you wrote a little over a year ago, I believe. Rouge and two-point conversion was the title of it. And boy, we'd love to hear your tale.
Yeah, so following up on what you just said, I would encourage people to watch Canadian football. I mean, I think it's a really fun brand of football, very talented athletes, and I get into arguments with some Canadian folks online from time to time. They are not as good as the NFL players. That's all there is to it. But they're supremely talented, you know, athletes. They're really good. And it's just a fun, open game. And it kind of is played in an atmosphere that, to me, feels more like a college atmosphere than a pro, than an NFL atmosphere, which means I like it. So,
anyways. Yeah, it's fun, and you get to see a lot more. There's a lot of Americans that play. I think they're allowed to have like one third of their team or something.
Almost half. Yeah, it gets kind of goofy, but.
But I know just from my area, you know, we had a couple. Trevor Harris is still quarterback. He quarterbacked at Edinburgh, where my alma mater, just a few miles from here. And Jovan Johnson is originally from Erie. I officiated when he played, and he was a cornerback for multiple teams up there and had a successful Canadian career. So yeah, it's a great game, wide open, three downs, and a lot of passing. So it's fun.
Well, so what's interesting, you mentioned the Americans playing there, and is the fact that I wrote this tidbit in reaction to a mistake made by an American player playing in Canada. So, you know, he's relatively, you know, he's a rookie and relatively, you know, his early season game may have even been a preseason game. But so, you know, in Canadian football, when a live ball goes into your end zone, the end zone that you are defending, you have to get that ball out of there. Or else the opposing team scores a point. You know, it's kind of similar to the safety. But Canadian football doesn't have a touchback. You know, they have safeties, but what we would consider a touchback is the rouge or the single. They get 1 point instead of two. And so it's kind of a, now there are other rule changes that help. that in that, they've got the 5-yard circle around somebody catching a punt. They also still have the return kick, which you don't see that often, but American football had the return kick until the mid-60s, at least the colleges did. And the return kick is anytime a team gets possession of a ball, it could be from a fumble, it could be a intercepted pass, but most often it came on punt return. If you caught the punt, you could turn around just and you could immediately kick the ball back to the team that punted it. It's all just a field possession kind of thing. And it was a remnant of rugby. And so American football got rid of it because people stopped using it, but Canadian football hung on to it. And so anyways, so one way to get the ball out of the end zone is to boot, punt it out. So anyways, so again, the rouge or single is scored when a live ball goes into the end zone on a punt, kickoff, field goal attempt, extra point attempt, and you're responsible for getting it out of the end zone. If it goes into the end zone and rolls out of the sideline, then the rouge is automatic or the single's automatic. But so it's really, I mean, if you think about it at the core, it's a way to reward a team for gaining favorable field position. I mean, that's really what it's about.
Now, Tim, just to make this clear, no, this is not does not apply to a fumble recovery or an interception in the end zone, correct? Just the kicking game.
No, it's possible I'm showing my ignorance, but no, I think anytime the ball enters the end zone.
Okay, all right.
So, so it's possible. And anyways, I could be wrong about that, but that's
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I'm just
as
questioning.
much as I've watched that, you're sometimes somebody asks me a question like that about Canadian. It's like, oh, I'm not sure. I got to look it up. So then let's switch to the 2-point conversion, which is so I'm trying to make a connection here in that, like, you could add the rouge to American football. And Americans would say, no, we can't add the rouge. That's silly. Why would we add the rouge? We don't need it. But back in like 1959, Fritz Kreisler, who was on the, he was coach and then AD at Michigan for years. He had been on the rules committee, for at least 15 years by that time. And he had been pushing for he had been pushing for American football or for college football to add a 2-point conversion because he thought the extra point kick was just boring. He thought it was the most boring play in football. So he was trying to, and there were too many tie games back then, yada yada. So, he thought it made sense to add the 2-point conversion. Now, the 2-point conversion actually originated in American football with 6-man football. But it was kind of the opposite. So the 2-point conversion is supposed to be kind of a reward for doing it the hard way, right? So supposedly running or passing the ball into the end zone is harder than kicking. And so in 6-man football, it was the opposite. If you kicked it, you got 2 points. If you ran or passed it, you got 1 point because that was supposed to be harder. You just had fewer players, less skilled players, yada, yada. You had to have both somebody who could snap the ball, somebody who could hold it, and somebody who could kick it. So I guess that's three things you needed. So the Chrysler finally convinces everybody to add the 2-point conversion in 1958. And here's the crazy thing. This is how much football has changed, at least the kicking side of things. So if you, here's a quiz for you. In 1958, what percentage of kicked conversions were good? Or, were, yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
So kicked conversion percentage, successful kicks in a
Yes,
college
successful.
game in 58. I don't know, I'll say 50%.
Well, that's a pretty good guess. 48.6. So, what was the 2-point conversion percentage?
I'm gonna say maybe 25%.
51.8.
Really?
Yeah, so teams were able to convert the 2 point at a higher rate than the kicked extra point.
Now, were they going from the 3 yard line back then or from the 2 yard line?
I'm not sure. I think it was the three.
Three, okay.
But what it really points to is how bad kicking was. I mean, I think in the late 50s, there were times like in the entirety of college football, there were like less than 100 field goals in, made at least among like say what we'd consider Division I teams now. I mean, teams just mostly they just didn't attempt kick or field goals very often because to kick a field goal, you needed a snapper, you needed a holder, and you needed a kicker. And all of them had to be on the field. This is before sub, you know, a lot of, open substitution. So they had to all be on the field when you scored with limited exceptions. I mean, there were times where teams would substitute, but, so teams just sucked at the extra point conversions and at field goals. So they didn't try them very often. So anyway, it's just one of those things that, now with, specialist long snappers and, typically it's the punter that is your holder nowadays. And you've got specialist kickers who are also soccer style kickers, which very few were, in 1958. It's just the game is just the kicking game in particular has just changed so dramatically since then. So I don't know. It's just, part of the reason I think it's a great, why the 2 point conversion is great, and in part why the Rouge is great, is it forces coaches to make decisions. There's a strategic element to it. It's like pinch hitting in baseball, or that kind of. There's an element of coaches having to make a choice, and then the players have to be able to execute on it. And so if you're the American rookie who doesn't understand, he's got to get the ball out of the end zone, then the best laid coaching plans sometimes just don't work out.
It's interesting that you say, the specialist of the long snapper. I had a conversation. I had the honor of talking to Craig Colquitt. He was a punter for the Steelers in the late 70s, won a couple Super Bowls with them. His two sons both won Super Bowls recently in the NFL. And he was telling me, we were talking, and he was, he being the punter, he was, of course, was the holder for Roy Girella and Matt Barr during those Steelers teams we played. And I asked him, I said, well, who's your long snapper then? And Mike Webster, the Hall of Fame center, who he was the long snapper and the center. And we forget, that's not that long ago, 40 some years ago, that those guys were staying on the field and even doing special teams, snapping the ball, where today that's unheard of. I don't think there's any starting center that is the long snapper. And that's just odd how that's changed.
Yeah, well, I mean, and so it's even so when when I was in grad school, I had a chance to coach at a couple of different colleges, and we didn't, this is like early to mid 80s. We didn't have long snappers. It was an offensive tackle or whoever it was. Sometimes you had a fullback who had learned to snap in high school, and so he was a snapper. It wasn't like you didn't have extra guys who knew how to do that. And so, that's just one of those things that.
But you would think today, I mean, there's a lot more shotgun and pistol formations where they're long snapping on regular scrimmage plays. So these centers are used to putting that ball
Yeah,
back there.
it's a whole different thing. I mean, tossing on a the short snap on a shotgun versus a long snap, both. For a place kick or for, punts especially, that's a whole different animal.
It's a funny
I mean,
thing, but
it's really a specialized technique, and so I'm glad these guys make money doing it because it's,
yeah, that's for sure. They're making a lot of money doing it. That's
yeah. I mean, yeah, give me the NFL minimum salary anytime you want. I'll take it.
right. Yeah, I don't blame you.
Maybe I
Well,
should go
hey,
back and start learn how to snap.
yeah,
Yeah,
there you
that's
go. they let middle-aged men go into NFL and snap be specialists anymore. Tom Brady was pretty much that,
oldest rookie in NFL history.
Right. go back to what was the guy that wrote Paper Lions when he went back? He was, of course, he was a little younger than us, I think, when he did it. But George,
Plimpton.
yeah, that's it, George Pumpkin. Tim, fascinating stuff, a very enjoyable, very interesting. And, thank you for that explanation and giving us a little look at Canadian football, but also talking about the history of our game, which is always fascinating. And you do a lot of this in your tidbits and some of your other posts on your website. And, if you could share with the listeners how they can, take a look at your stuff and maybe, subscribe to it and become a regular reader, we'd appreciate that.
Sure. Just, my site is footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site. And so you can just go there, subscribe. If you subscribe, there's free and paid versions. You'll get an email every time I send out a new story. Alternatively, you can, follow me on Substack app, on Threads, or on Twitter. So, on Twitter, I post, or respond to other people who are talking football. So there's some benefit to that, at least if you think I have anything to say. But I don't. Yeah, that's it. I don't. Everything I post is about football.
Okay. Well, Tim, we really appreciate you coming on here and sharing this information and sharing the knowledge and preserving football history. And we'd love to talk to you again next week.
All right. Very good. Look forward to it. Thanks.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.